Hello and welcome in.
First Science.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio. Good morning. You're listening to Science Mixtape with me, Matilda Hay. And this week, things are going to get a little ugly on our show as we welcome Simon Watt, founder of the Ugly Animal Preservation Society, dedicated to raising the profile of some of Mother Nature's more aesthetically challenged children. Simon started life as an evolutionary biologist and has gone on to have an incredibly varied career as a writer, science communicator, comedian, and even TV presenter. You may recognise him from the award-winning documentary Inside Nature's Giants. Welcome, Simon.
Good morning. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day, isn't it, down here in Soho? Now, Ugly Animals started as a comedy night with a conservation twist, but it's gone on to have a life of its own, hasn't it? I mean, you've got a book, you've got mascots around the world.
Yeah, none of this was deliberate, is the way to think of it. It's more or less because we started off as a society because I felt that we had a need. You know, everybody does know the panda, and everybody does know the polar bear and the snow leopard, but basically what we know is the charismatic megafauna, and the charismatic megafauna, I think, are boring. So for a start, there's that. If you only are focused on the biology of a couple of cute bear things, then you're going to miss out so much. But more than that, these other creatures need our help. So if people think of donating to a charity that looks after pandas and polar bears, that's the job done. In this day of major crisis for biodiversity, you've got to talk about these other more, shall we say, they've been hit by a couple of ugly branches as they fell out of a tree.
Not blessed with looks.
No.
And one of the ways you do this is holding mascots, isn't it? Can you tell us about your global mascot? This was a campaign a couple of years ago, right?
Ah, yeah. So this one was different because we went on YouTube. And because we went on YouTube, we could get people to vote all over the world. Because normally what happens is we tour the country, we tour a wee bit internationally, and everywhere we go, we get people to vote their own local minger to be their mascot. Mm. So, for instance, in Winchester, it's the scrotum frog. In London.
Name.
Oh, yeah. Do you know, the name is very descriptive for it as well. Look it up. And I should point out, guys, if any of your anatomy looks anything like that, seek medical attention as fast as humanly possible. That's all I can say. But anyway, so that's Winchester. London is the proboscis monkey. Edinburgh, it's the gob-faced squid. But for this online one, we got various comedians. Paul Foote won in the end because he was championing the blobfish. And since then, in perpetuity, the blobfish is the emblem of our society.
And it really is one of the ugliest things I've ever seen. It looks like jelly with a sad, grumpy face and a weird nose.
Yeah, it's a sort of deep-sea blancmange, I always think. But no wonder it looks so sad. I mean, if deep-sea trawling off the coast of Tasmania in Australia is potentially driving it to be endangered, then, you know, we've got to talk about these things.
Yeah.
And the truth is, actually, underwater, it's not quite as blobby-looking because of the pressures and things. It's just a bit more spherical. But even then, it's a bit of a munter.
Well, I'm super excited because right here today on Science Mixtape, we are in the middle of our very own election to decide who should be the Science Mixtape Ugly Animal mascot. Now, the Science Mixtape team have put our heads together and we've narrowed it down to four nominees who we think are worthy to be our mascots. But listeners, we need your help to decide. So I'm going to hand over to producer Yaz to tell you about her first nomination.
Okay, I'm a cheerleader now.
U-G-L-Y, you ain't got no alibi, you ugly. Hey, hey, you ugly.
U-G-L-Y. So the first animal up for election is the aye-aye. And the aye-aye is interesting because it was previously thought to be extinct, but they were rediscovered in 1961. Their decline is quite sad. So it's due primarily to habitat destruction, but also because in local folklore, they're seen as these harbingers of evil. And they've got a really long, freakish looking middle finger that it's thought that if it points at you with that finger, then you're going to die. So the true reality is it's just really unafraid of humans, and their freakishly long finger is just used to fish grubs out of trees.
It's a wonderful one. In fact, it's got an extra joint down at the bottom, which is a wee bit like what we have in our shoulder. So, you know, the phrase sit it and swivel. With them, you actually can.
So
for our second nomination is from one of our listeners, Helen Halshall, and she has nominated the Sega antelope. Now, head over to our Twitter to check out this picture at Science Mixtape. It has the most impressive nose you've ever seen. I mean, check out that schnozzle. But their plight is really quite severe. They are one of the most dramatic and sudden population crashes for a large mammal ever seen. 10 years ago, they went from 1 million to 30,000. And it's because... well, largely because in the 90s, the World Wildlife Fund, in order to protect rhinos, tried to persuade Asian pharmacists to use sega horns instead of rhino horns in their medicine. And that led to lots of illegal trade in sega horns. Sad times.
It looks a wee bit like sort of Alf, if it was an antelope, don't you think? Would you remember Alf? Are you a bit too young for that? The alien life form?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Yeah. It does look exactly like that. So for our third nomination, we have one of Britain's most endangered insects, which is the wart-biter cricket. And it gets its name from the Swedish practice in the 1700s where they used the cricket to bite warts off their skin.
An ugly practice.
Yeah, I would say that's a very ugly practice. They used to be widespread in southern England, but now they're only found at five sites due to overgrazing and grass and habitat destruction.
My favourite fact is that Bazooka, the wart cream, have been funding some of the restoration of their habitats.
Wow.
I know.
That's good sponsorship, actually.
It's really good.
It's not my favourite cricket, but I can see why. If you want a local one, and that does matter. People have to care about their local species. My favourite cricket is the giant weta, which is like a sort of sumo grasshopper from New Zealand.
Oh, they weigh
more than birds as well in some cases.
No.
It's really? Huge.
Terrifying.
Yeah, imagine it's about the size of... your fist. It could fit nicely in your face. That's the way I sort of think of it. It's a frightening looking thing.
Not something you want to wake up to in the morning. And finally, our fourth nomination. This was inspired by Helen Arney's favourite animal, and it is the axolotl. Now, axolotl are a type of salamander that never grow up. They spend their whole life in larval form living underwater. And they're most famous for being able to regenerate almost any part of their body. Their name comes from the Aztec word atl, meaning water, and zolotl, meaning monster. And they live in lakes near Mexico City, but their population is declining due to the lakes being drained and the introduction of predatory fish. Save the axolotl. So there you have it, listeners. Those are our four nominations.
So if you head over to our Twitter, which is at Science Mixtape, you can see a picture of each of these animals and see just how weird looking they are. And more importantly, you can cast your vote.
And we will be revealing the answers later in the show. Simon, who have you voted for?
I do have to remain impartial. So actually, in every single one of our elections, I talk about some of my animals that aren't up for the election. So one of my favourites, for instance, is called the Canadian Blue-Grey Taildropper Slug. And I love it so much because if you scare it, its bum drops off. Which is a fantastic survival strategy, actually, because it's leaving behind its tail. So whatever's chasing will stop and eat the tail where the slug can then leg it, or, you know.
That is a fantastic survival strategy. And for anyone wanting to take part in our experiment later, we'll be recreating some insect resonant noises using... In fact, Simon, do you want to tell listeners what they need?
Well, you need a couple of things, depending which insect and which kind of animal you're trying to do. But the one I recommend, because it's two experiments in one, get yourself a balloon and get yourself a small coin, like a 5p or something that'll fit inside it easily. Push it through the neck and then blow it up and wait.
Great. Get those and get ready. Now, after the longest introduction ever, it's time for your first song. Simon, what are we having first?
This is Never Ever Ever Again by Siskiyou. I saw them once in Bristol live and they blew me away, and I've been a big fan ever since.
Like a rain out of my mind.
Sometimes anatomical adaptations can leave an animal lacking in the looks department. Case in point, the star-nosed mole. Each fleshy ray of its snout contains thousands of sensory organs that allow it to navigate and sense prey.
Now, Simon, you said at the top that you started this society, oh, Matilda, speak on the radio, kind of by accident. But could you tell me what was the inspiration behind it? What gave you the idea originally?
Well, there's sort of two parts of it. First of all, I suppose I've done a lot of documentaries and things which have usually focused around dead animals. So in Inside Nature's Giants, we were dissecting animals and looking inside them. On the Elephant Wildlife After Death, we were watching one decompose for 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
So that requires a little bit of reverence, you know? You have to be a bit serious and sort of be in the right mode. And there, as a result, people thought that I wasn't stupid and silly as well, which is utterly
true. So it
was
all about changing your image.
No, partly. Just a minute, I was able to talk about things that I was wanting to talk about anyway. And comedy is a big part of that. So I'm doing comedy as a hobby. I do it, can I do the odd headline, the odd MC job and all those kind of things. And I've always MC'd the ugly animals. But that's partly because this is a depressing topic, man. You know, if 200 things are dying out every single day, then
Every single day.
That's one of the estimates. So it does vary from maybe about 100 up all the way up to 250, but 200 seems to be one of the most reliable ones I've come across. And yeah, so how do you keep talking to people about something which is making them want to leave and not listen to you and switch off, but it's so dire? And comedy was the answer. Like, how else can we have a gig which lasts 2 hours talking about things that are dying out, other than by keeping it light and keeping it fun? But the real way it really started was I was giving lots of talks at the times, and people were always asking me at the end, okay, what's your favourite animal? And they were expecting something like cute and fluffy or majestic like a lion.
Yeah.
And then I'd start talking to them about ants and they looked so disappointed. And then I'd have to spend the rest of the talk basically shouting at them and telling them they're wrong, and ants are far more fascinating and some of the most amazing things.
I do think ants are really cool.
Well, you're correct and the rest of the world is wrong. This is the thing, is that we're neglecting these animals, and that's they are weird and they're wonderful, and you'll find so much more fascinating stuff by not being afraid to look in strange places, I guess.
One of the things that you've said to me before, which really struck a chord, was the idea that conservation is incredibly important, but it's not so important that it's above satire.
Yeah, well, again, that was why we were a comedy night, partly. And I have had, like, genuine hate mail. Like, that has happened, where people have said, how dare you say this about the panda, when I'm obviously only taking the mickey.
Yeah.
And I've had genuine hate mail where even people are saying, how dare you say anything is ugly? So I've been getting it from both sides. And then people usually come to a gig and they go, oh, it's a joke. And then when they finally do get it, they can see how it's important. It's a way of talking to things. Like, whenever I do talks in schools about this, because the Ugly Animal Roadshow is a family version of the Ugly Animal gigs. And some people are literally objecting to the title ugly, because we think we'll be talking about, like, lessening the self-esteem of perhaps kids and things like this. But whenever they see me walk on stage and go, these things are ugly, you don't think they're amazing, but they are. And okay, that big nose of the proboscis monkey is actually a way of getting the girls. And
yeah,
that's a huge...
Or the sacred antelope's nose, I'm just going to plug it once more, is flexible and can be inflated. And this means that it can filter out like dusty air when it's in the summer deserts and breathe warm air in the winter.
But that's
so
the key, isn't it? Is that evolution does not care what we think of it. That's ultimately it. We have to get used to the indifference of the universe. And we have to stop being so myopic and only caring about the things which are cute and fluffy and lucky enough to have a face. I mean,
yes,
it's just so much more interesting.
It's only because we're a social species that we're primed to look for faces. Apparently that's why they put headlights on cars the way they do. Like, they could have had just a strip or one headlight in the middle, but they did some research and they found that having the two headlights kind of like eyes with that grill as a kind of mouth made people respond to the cars more and connect to them more.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of it seems to be perhaps biased towards our liking of babies and children. So we do like big-eyed things. And that's partly so we don't eat our kids. Like, we have to really think of it like this. If you're going to be lots of animals, cannibalism is normal. You know, you go out there and if you wake up one morning, you're a bit cranky, your kids are opposite you, they're a bit annoying, you're bound to look and think, that's a good breakfast, that is. But, you know, you've got to find ways of stopping doing that. So in the case of the Komodo dragon, for instance, the babies can climb trees, mum can't. In the case of humans, though, we look at them and think they're adorable and they're ours and they're so sweet. It's just evolution doing the same thing, but by two very different tactics.
And ugly totally is in the eye of the beholder. I mean, the wart biter cricket, some people have described as the most beautiful insect in England. And other people are just like, no, all insects are ugly and icky and get them away from me.
Yeah.
And I think as a species, we have a very singular idea of what beauty is. And actually, when you think about a lot of kind of science fiction and human enhancement, which I know we'll come on to later when we talk about your podcast, some people have complained that why, whenever we think about enhancement, we always just think of taller, slimmer, blonder, and we don't think about, oh, let's have eight arms, because that would be really useful.
Yeah, and you know, you've already highlighted it there, I think, is that we have to remember that we're the minority. If you're going to look at the animal world, 90% is invertebrates. Like, the vast majority of animals out there are insects. So our idea of what is beautiful is the minority.
Maybe
mammals
think we're
are rare.
Ugly.
They probably do. And they're right.
Perfect time to go to your second song. What are we having?
Ah, the second one is This Ingenue, I think, by Atoms for Peace. Controversial. I prefer Atoms to Peace to Radiohead. This is Tom York's other band with Flea as the bassist. I love this song.
Head and snout appear to be covered in warts. However, these are not warts at all. Rather, they are thick, fleshy pads that protect the animal in combat.
So, we have an absolute treat. I'm so excited to say that one of our listeners has actually turned up at the studio today to come and see the show. Welcome, Charlie. It's so exciting to
have you here.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. And you're just in time for our experiment. So, Simon, take it away. What are we doing?
Okay, so this was something I thought, you know, we're on the radio, so it has to be audio. It's something that people can hear. And Charlie's going to take part here as well. So you currently have a balloon. Have you managed to slip the 5 pence inside that balloon?
Nope.
So you're going to have to stretch it round. I've got one in true Blue Peter style right here that I've already done. So just push it through and blow it up as much as you can. And this is, I like this because it's kind of a value experiment. It's sort of two experiments in one. Perfect sound effects, too. And just tie it off there. Now, it takes a wee bit of a knack, but you want to try and get revolving the balloon so that the coin is moving around on its edge inside.
For anyone who can't see, the coin is literally spinning around, almost as if it was orbiting the centre. Or like when you see those motorbikes drive round and round a ball, like that is what the coin's doing. It's spinning around like on an axis.
So this is a physics experiment to begin with, really. What we're actually getting is, of course, centripetal force. So that's the reason why if you stop for a minute, it still continues. But we're also seeing sort of the principles of physics that you also find in biology for the making of sound. So the friction of the coin moving around to the inside is causing the membrane of the balloon to vibrate. And that's pretty much how your vocal cords and other things work. Nearly everything that animals do to make sound is, of course, making vibration. That's what sound is. And you've got lots of ways of doing this. So one of them, like this, is vibrating membranes. To an extent, this is what things like frogs do. They've got a big resonance chamber. That's where they've got that big puffy thing that only they use in their larynx.
When it really bulges out, right?
Yeah. So they're, you know, creating, allowing the vibrations caused by the friction over their vocal cords to extend beyond that. Other animals do something slightly different. So, for instance, here I have, just it's a biscuit tin kind of thing. This is what cicadas do. They have tympanic timbals, tympanic membranes, and effectively they're deforming them. So they clench the muscles, the shape changes, so that stores up a bit of potential energy, you release, and it changes as well. But they're doing that thousands of times a second. So if you ever hear, like, one of my favourites...
They are loud critters.
They are, like buzzsaws. My favourite one's someone called the 6 o'clock cicada, because we heard these when we were out in Borneo filming. And within a minute, like either 5:59 or 6:01, they started doing this loud call. You could tell the time using cicadas. They are that precise.
Oh my god, wow.
Now, they only can get away with that because of their position, the fact that they're sort of near enough to the equator that it's consistent.
It doesn't change with the seasons.
But it was incredible all the same to see that they were, you could just hear this thing, you'd look at your watch and go, yeah, that's buying on time.
My alarm has struck.
I was always trying to see whether there'd be any kind of late, tardy cicadas, but no, they were in unison doing all these loud noises. And the final one, because this should go in, this is in the world records, this is in the Guinness World Records, is the loudest animal for its size. It's the water boatman. And what a water boatman does is equivalent, effectively, of what happens whenever you use a zip. So you're moving one ridged surface over the top of another ridged surface. In their case, they're using their penis. And they're using a ridged surface along their back. And it is the loudest animal for its size on the planet. That's, we can hear them here in Britain, and you can hear them with the naked ear, so to speak.
That's incredible. And sounds like quite a contortion.
Well, do you know, I don't know if it... I don't know if it sounds like anything other than a vibration, really, to be truthful. It sounds the same kind of way as a cricket sounds, really. And it's effectively still the same thing. It's just producing vibrations in a different way.
And for anyone listening at home, you can also feel your own vocal cords vibrating. If you find your throat and your Adam's apple and put your fingers just below and then hum or make a noise, and you should feel that vibration in your fingers.
Another trick, if you want to ever try this is a wee bit of a strange, weird party piece, but it really impresses my son. You can whistle and hum at the same time, but in that same kind of thing. So if you vibrate your lips as well as vibrating other parts of your mouth, so...
Simon, what? You are so multi-talented.
That's the basis of throat singing and things as well. It's just vibrating different parts of the mouth to try and get two notes at one time.
Mm. Now, since we're talking about insects, you've said your favourite animal is ants, and I agree. But shall we tell the listeners a little bit more about why ants are so cool?
I think ants are incredible. Actually, I'm going to ask you what your favourite is, because I do have a new favourite ant.
A new favourite ant.
It might be one that impresses you, but I want to hear what yours is first.
Okay, so I can't remember its proper name, but this is the ant where some of the members of the colony, their job is to eat loads and loads of food, and then they swell up and become these big balls of effectively like nectar or syrup. And they just sit in the colony, these giant balls, a bit like Veruca, who blows up into a gooseberry in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And then when there's less food, the other ants just like drink the syrup from them, and then they go back to normal size. And that is their whole job.
I think it's called a honey pot ant,
yes,
if I remember right.
Yeah.
Because it is like a pot of honey. If you ever see them, they look like sort of grapes with ants on the end. Their entire abdomen swells up. There's a really wonderful experiment where some scientists fed honey pot ants different dyed syrups. So some of them are coming out with these bright red behind, some of them these big blue ones, some green. It's a beautiful thing. Look it up. My favourite ant. Do you want to hear this?
Yes.
All right. In fact, Charlie, at the correct points, I want you to go, that's disgusting. Okay? You can have a practice if you like.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, you've done this before. Perfect. Okay. So it's called the Dracula ant, and it comes from Madagascar. And the first... Well, it gets worse. if you think that's the disgusting bit, it comes from Madagascar. It looks a little bit like sort of popped bit of popcorn, I reckon. And the thing you have to remember is that all ants and bees are descended from wasps. So this is an ant which has got a sting in its tail, like a wasp.
The granddad. I did not know that.
Yeah, it's the same kind of family. And the ancestral form was like a wasp.
Bees are my favourite animal.
Well, do you know what? Ants are mine, and I can see why, because they're basically so, so similar. Yeah. And you've got to think of this ant as even... So first of all, what it does is it goes along, finds something like a nice juicy caterpillar, stings it. This sting will paralyze it. They then carry it back to the colony, where they feed it to the grubs, who eat it alive.
Ooh, that's disgusting.
That's not the disgusting bit, mate. No, it gets worse. Because what do the workers eat? Well, they scratch holes in the grubs and suck the grubs' blood.
That's disgusting.
What? No, you got that wrong. That's not the disgusting bit. Because the disgusting bit is really actually where then they go, the workers, after they've had their blood, they go to the queen. Because what does the queen eat? They vomit the blood up for her to drink.
That is disgusting.
Yeah, that is as bad as it gets.
No way.
But the whole point here is that it works, doesn't it? Because the grubs are much, much better at turning food into ant.
Yes.
And because the workers don't have to chew, because they're drinking a nutritious soup of blood, instead of having mouth parts for chewing, they could have mouth parts for carrying caterpillars to feed the grubs. So it makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, everyone's got their part to play.
Hmm.
I really like that. And I can see the relation, because when we think about delicious honey, bees are basically vomiting pollen.
Yeah. You just kind of put me off it a bit. I know that it is awesome, but I suppose it... Do you still like bees?
Yeah, I still like bees.
Do you still like honey? That's a different question.
I have honey in my tea.
You have honey in your tea?
Yeah.
You have bee vomit in your tea. I hope that doesn't put anyone off to breakfast.
That's disgusting.
All right, song three, Simon.
This is Atlas by Battles. When I was at uni, I definitely went through one of those sort of post-rock phases where I thought if the song had lyrics, it was useless and there was no point. This is a post-rock song with some lyrics, but really messed about with treating the voice like it's an instrument, really. Yeah.
Proboscis monkeys are famous for their enormous noses. Scientists think these create an echo chamber that amplifies the monkey's call, impressing females and intimidating rival males.
Well, from monkeys to another animal entirely. Now, Simon, I know that starting the Ugly Animal Preservation Society inspired you to do a whole stand-up set about frogs. Why did you choose frogs?
So for a start, you know, saying I have to be impartial at our lectures, so yeah. I talk about other animals. And so I found I was just talking more and more about frogs, and that was for two reasons. Firstly, because they are the biologist's animal. They do everything. They've got that metamorphosis. You find there's frogs that can survive freezing. There's frogs which can glide. There's the first ever fluorescent frog was found. The first ever fluorescent amphibian was found a couple of weeks back.
Yes, I saw that in the news.
Yeah,
they've got
cool.
Kind of fluorescent spots on them, haven't they?
That's the one. Yeah. So they're massively varied, and they do everything the biologist could ever want. They're incredible hunters. They've got those ultra fast tongues. They can swim. They're tadpoles. They can. You name it. All-terrain animal. Wonderful.
Some of them are poisonous.
Oh, yeah.
Never mind. Very cool colours.
I forgot all about that, because that's another whole other level. But the other main reason, most endangered group of animals in the entire planet.
Really?
So if you're going to try and start somewhere, as I was, to try and make a difference using comedy, that seemed to be the first one. The second most endangered is turtles, so that's my next stand-up show taken care of.
You hear so much more about the turtles than I've never, ever thought of frogs as being endangered at all, even the ones that live in exotic places.
So the way to think of it is currently half of all the amphibians are in decline and two-thirds of all frogs. And it's partly because, well, they're being hit from multiple directions. So they are very often used as what we call an indicator species. If you look at some ecosystem in, say, like Ecuador or something like that, if you see that the frogs are going, you know everything else is going to follow suit.
Really?
They're one of the first ones to disappear.
So they like represent the kind of health of the environment.
Yeah, they're very good like that. It's partly because of their moist skin, if nothing else.
Wait, how?
So that means that you need to have good water quality. You need to have good air quality.
Oh,
to an
I guess
because
their moist skin would like absorb pollutants more easily.
Spot on. And it also means that's one of the reasons why they're actually really doomed. There's a fungus called the chytrid fungus, and that is worse for frogs than the Black Death was for humans. This is a disease that was spread right the way across the world because of Xenopus. So I love this, and actually this is a big part of my stand-up show, is talking about how the world's first ever reliable pregnancy test was by a guy called Lancelot Hogben. And he's the man who discovered that if you get the urine of a pregnant woman and you add it to the African clawed frog Xenopus, then within a day, that frog would lay its frog spawn.
No way. So you literally just pee on a frog?
Well, it's not quite as simple as that. But for the sake of my stand-up, I pretend it is. Because then the logical question is, how do you discover that?
Yeah,
and does this just mean pregnant women have instant incontinence or something and they're wandering around weeing and everything, you know? And that's, of course, not quite true. They do inject it. But within a day, if you add the urine of a pregnant woman to the Xenopus, it will lay its frog spawn. So this became our closest thing to a reliable pregnancy test for ages. And as a result, Xenopus went to North America, South America, Australia, went all over the world.
Yeah.
And it took with it this fungus. It was immune and nothing else was. And that's one of the main reasons why they're so in such a bad way right now.
It is the danger of moving species from country to country, isn't it?
Yeah, look, that's one of the dangers. And of course, we also find that there's invasive species, so things which just take off and are a big success. And frogs are part of that as well. Look at the story of the cane toad.
Is that the one that went to Australia?
That's the one that went to Australia. I've also got a fondness of cane toads because my first ever time in Australia and my first time ever trying any form of gambling was when I bet on a cane toad in a cane toad race.
A cane toad race.
And I won even more. That's another good thing. I got a free trip in a boat out to the Great Barrier Reef.
That's
from
amazing.
A cane toad.
Brilliant. How far did it have to go?
Oh, it was kind of, they had like a... It was a bucket just full of them. I don't know if this is a normal thing in Australia. You never know what's representative, do you? But yeah, they just put them in the bucket and see who could leap out the fastest and get... There's a big circle drawn around it and which one could escape. I don't know if it counts as like racing, even.
So it's more like a kind of jumping competition.
Oh, yeah. I don't think any cane toads were harmed in the making of this. And again, half the problem is cane toads are such a massive problem in Australia that actually, if they were, people wouldn't really mind that much.
Yeah. Well, this is one kind of devil's advocate style question. I mean, are there some animals that actually we'd be better off without? I mean, personally, I'm thinking of the mosquito. I don't think I would be sorry at all if the mosquito died out. And I'm sure, like, as it spread so much malaria, many other people wouldn't. Oh!
That was one of our experiments just exploding.
Nice.
Sorry.
Don't worry. Yeah, actually, I should warn you, if you are ever doing that experiment at home, bear in mind that you've got a 5p in something which is quite explosive. that could have gone hurtling across the rim and killed several people. No, luckily it didn't, or we're not going to miss them. But, you know, it's a...
it was just slapping a mosquito. The metaphorical species.
Do you know, I wouldn't mind if some species of mosquito disappeared earlier. That's actually the thing, of course, is that one of the reasons I talk about this stuff so much is I think our relationship with animals is completely mixed up and messed up. We care about some things because they're cute and fluffy. Some things are deemed to be perfectly normal as pets. Some things are deemed to be perfectly normal as pests. And the truth is that there isn't any simple answer. There's massive grey areas here. Mm. And also, actually, we've got problems in the environmental movement because a lot of people think animals good, humans bad. And that ain't true. You know, one of the best ways of looking after animals in some parts of the world is to look after the humans. It's plain simple.
And then they don't have to sort of pet, like...
Yeah, poaching does not happen by people who are not desperate. Yeah. That's one of those things we have to accept. We also have to accept that we are in a crisis and that I would love to say we can save everything. We'll never be able to save everything. So we should be making informed decisions. That's all I want. I don't want us to save the panda because the panda is the only thing that deserves it. I don't want us to ignore the panda because the panda deserves to be ignored. But I'm looking at it from a strictly economic viewpoint. They cost more to feed than elephants. So if we're making choices, I'd rather we know what we're doing.
And also, I suppose some species are really, what are they called, like keystone species in an environment. And if that species goes, there's a whole like domino effect.
Yes.
And many others will be wiped out as well.
Nothing ever goes extinct in isolation. That's a way to think of it. Actually, here's a good example. So the mascot of the Wild Screen Festival, which is kind of like the Wildlife Oscars, when we held one of those, it was our biggest gig ever. We had like over 1,000 people in Bristol a couple of years back. And they elected the pubic louse. Now, that sounds gross and disgusting. It's because it is. But genuinely, some people in Rotterdam believe that it is endangered. You're going to love this because so many people are having Brazilians. So it's suffering from deforestation. Like, that's incredible to begin with, isn't it?
That is incredible.
And they might be wrong. But the thing was, there was an excuse to talk about parasites. So currently on the endangered species list, there's only one endangered parasite. That's the pygmy hog-sucking louse. And of course, we know that everything has its own unique parasites. Mm. So that is not the only endangered parasite in the world. If the panda dies out, if the blobfish dies out, both of them are taking parasites and part of their ecosystems with them. Do you know, I used to actually hate ecology when I was studying it because you could summarize it in a very hippie style of, oh, everything's connected. That's because it's kind of is. Yeah. So nothing does not have a domino effect.
Yeah. Time for your fourth song.
Okay, I think this is the Shins, new slang. I love this because, to my mind, I think I've just walked around to this in my headphones for too long whenever it's been snowing, so this is the sound of winter to me.
Gold teeth and a curse for this town, roll in my mouth, only I don't know how they got out here. Turn me back into the dead. I was when we met, I was happier then with no mindset.
Philippine tarsiers can fit in the palm of your hand. Their bulging eyes are bigger than their brains, their hands and legs resemble human limbs, and they can leap as high as 10 feet.
Science. News.
News just in. Earth-sized telescope prepares to take the first photo of a black hole event horizon.
Deadly spider venom used to ward off brain damage.
Ultrasound safely delivers drugs to damaged brains of mice.
Evidence is revealed of an ancient geological Brexit.
Graphene used to allow you to drink seawater.
Cephalopods may have traded evolution gains for extra smarts.
I'm going to jump straight in. I am so excited by this graphene story. Tell me more. How do we drink seawater?
Ah, now this is fantastic news because this is one of those inventions that will make a major difference to millions.
So many people.
This is what makes you happy about science, actually, because, you know, okay, well, we're a bit sorry about the atom bomb and we're a bit sorry about some of the other things that have happened, but this should be what tech is for helping people. And effectively, graphene, you might have heard of it before because it's got dead famous. It's one of those new wonder materials. It is the best conductor in the world. It's in the strongest substance in the planet.
It's only one atom thick. Like, it's so thin. It's flexible.
A layer of carbon atoms. And they've created a sieve, effectively, using graphene, which means you can filter out pure, clean water from seawater. And that will change the world.
And is this something, is it like a prototype, or is it still quite experimental?
I believe it's probably still at the stage where it's expensive, because making graphene is expensive. But whenever you get over that trouble, and it is getting cheaper all the time, this could have massive industrial application. And even when it's expensive currently, it can still be used. There'll be parts of the world where this is one of the most effective means of getting clean water still.
That's so exciting.
Yeah, it's not a tiny wee hole, effectively. They're punching, it is a literal sieve that works on the molecular level.
Yaz, tell me more about your brains of mice.
Okay, so this is a really promising step in the future treatment of Alzheimer's disease. And that's very important, because by the year 2050, I think it's going to be, this is off the top of my head, I'm not working this up, I think there's going to be like 900,000 people in the country or something with form of dementia. So one of the major challenges inhibiting the treatment of Alzheimer's disease is that the majority of drugs designed to treat the disease can't make it into the brain, so they can't cross over the blood-brain barrier. So what this ultrasound is doing, it's a really great non-invasive way to open up the blood-brain barrier temporarily using ultrasound waves. And that can now let the antibody drug treatment into the brain and into the nerve cells where the damage occurs. And it actually, the antibody is for a tau protein antibody, which is one of the...
Those are the plaques you
the
get,
plaques you get in Alzheimer's, yeah. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's another one that's going to be like a really helping people.
Pretty positive.
It's tricky to get your head around the kind of blood-brain barrier thing.
Yeah,
it is.
Also, like, if that fell into the wrong hands, what else are they going to be shoving in your brain?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I see that as the next plot of a James Bond villain.
But why not, actually? I suppose that's one of those technologies that will open up other technologies. It won't be just using that one type of drug. Mm. It's kind of like they've opened the door, and then what goes through the door is optional.
Absolutely. Brilliant. Yeah, very good point.
So I have a much less happy, but kind of interesting, kind of just headline-y story. So the geological Brexit, basically, scientists have discovered how Britain used to be connected to Europe by a thin strip of land, and how they think we got separated.
Is this actual news, or is this just the age of the media savvy scientist who discovered, I wonder what's in the news right now, how can we jump a ship onto that? Like, how can we hop on a bandwagon?
I mean, I think it is news, but it's probably not as... I feel like, why has it been released this week or this year? I feel like they've been working on it for a while. So they think that it was at the end of the Ice Age, and there was this huge lake above the strip of land, like sort of north of the strip of land connecting Britain and Europe, and that when this lake flooded, it sort of plunged down onto that strip of land and eroded it away. And they found really cool, like, massive holes on the channel floor, which are sort of, you know, kilometers wide and hundreds of meters deep, that they think were like carved by this plunge pool.
Nope, not convinced. You may as well just say geology happens.
Well, there we go. Your next story is over.
I know, this is more like it. Okay, so funnel web spiders, lethal, deadly. One bite can kill you within 15 minutes. But they find a harmless ingredient in this venom which can protect brain cells from being destroyed after a stroke. And the thing which is really fundamental here is that this drug can be given even hours after an event. So you may have heard the acronym FAST for whenever you're dealing with a stroke. You have to get a deal of it as fast as you possibly can. So this might buy a little bit more time and hopefully prevent damage from people who are suffering from strokes.
That's so cool. And it's like you said before, like, how did someone realize to use venom for a medical purpose?
Do you know what? This is not overly surprising, because biologists have been onto this for quite a while, this kind of thing. We have to remember that if you're looking for biochemistry, the best place to find it is the natural world. So yet another argument for protecting all these species is that they are useful. Evolution has been making chemicals for far, far longer than we have. And I think years ago, this is an out-of-date stat now, but at one time, the American Institute of Cancer Research said that 1/3 of all promising anti-cancer drugs were coming from the Amazon rainforest. And that's one ecosystem.
That's amazing.
So it goes to show, like, if nothing else, look after the cricket.
They're discovering new ones all the time, aren't they?
Frogs. Some of the best antibiotics that we're currently looking at. And bearing in mind that antibiotics might be useless, are coming from frog skins.
Wow.
150 found in the past couple of years.
That's amazing.
This is what we're learning about in A-level biology at the moment.
About how you're going to be doomed, your generation.
Yeah, basically. And how they've got the database of all the antibodies that they have. And when they find a new chemical, they look at the antigens on the chemical and the receptors.
Well, these are fantastic techniques. And you're right, like that's one of the big hopes, because if antibiotic resistance does take off the way it does, or the way we're predicting it to, we're back in the dark ages. We're talking of dying from a toothache.
No more surgery. Like, so many things will start to be lethal again.
Now, Charlie, you're younger than us, so this is going to affect... You might live to be as old as we are. You know, that's what we're saying. Good luck. Hope you survive.
I'm going to move on to your fifth song, Simon.
Oh, my fifth song? This is cheating, because I wanted to get two of my favourite bands in one. So this is King Creosote, but a remix of his song by Tongue.
There's one in the twin tub, two in the basket, one on the floor just waiting to be asked in. I met her again, her laugh no less wooden, she'd varnished on a smile like something bad had just happened. It had, I found out much later. Now she was listening, if not just slightly listening.
The red-lipped batfish looks like it tried to compensate for an unusual body with lipstick. Scientists believe the purpose of its bright red lips is for the male of the species to attract the female. Now, very excitingly, the votes have closed, and we are ready to announce the science mixtape mascot, Yaz. I'm going to ask you to do the honours. Okay, so I'm going to go from last place to first place, and very unpatriotically, in last place, with only a fraction of the vote, is the Wartbiter Cricket. Mm. So, sorry about that, Wartbiter Cricket.
You were just too bitey.
Yeah.
No one likes the warts.
Yeah, too much of an association with warts. And then tied for second place, excitingly, is the Aye and the Saiga Antelope, which got the exact same amount of votes, so they're equally as popular and miles ahead of the Wartbiter Cricket. And edging it in first place, that means we have the Axolotl, which is now the Science Mixtape official ugly animal mascot.
Congratulations. Yes.
Oh, what a cool one to have.
Good timing as well, bearing in mind what we were just talking about, because we're talking about research into animals and how useful they are. People are looking at axolotls all the time to see if we can get their regenerative capabilities.
Yeah, the regenerative medicine. So we've got one with a kind of science bent as well. It's perfect.
Brilliant. I'm also pleased because there's a school I went to and they've named their axolotl after me. So little Simon right there will be pleased.
Yeah. Oh, it's so perfect. Thank you, listeners. You have chosen a wonderful mascot for us. Thank you so much. And now, Simon, I wanted to talk to you just before you go a little bit more about what you're doing now, because you have your own podcast as well, don't you?
Yeah, I'm busy at the minute. So, like, I suppose one of my jobs, I'm currently an artist in residence with Cracked Light at the National Maritime Museum. We're making art responding to George Stubbs' painting of a kangaroo. And then ongoing,
So for anyone who doesn't know, George Stubbs' painting of a kangaroo.
Oh, it's rubbish. Like, that's the reason why we're talking about it. Because, and the only reason it's rubbish is because he hadn't seen a kangaroo.
Yeah, it was from a description, wasn't it?
And he was lucky enough to have a pelt. But he also did a dingo. And the truth is, when I say they're rubbish, they're actually still pretty good. It's just they're not spot on. But you wouldn't expect that if you hadn't seen them. And these became the dominant images for over 100 years of these creatures in Britain and across Europe, really. Yeah, so that's pretty cool. That's one of the jobs. And the other thing, which is kind of ongoing, is I run the Level Up Human podcast with my colleague and friend Rachel Wheely. We've got a new episode out this week. It's got Robert Llewellyn, who's probably better known as Crichton from Red Dwarf, is judging. The idea is that we ask scientists and experts and our live audience if they could change one thing about our species. If they were to take humans back to the drawing board, what would they do?
And what would they change?
Varies every single week. And the thing is, actually, a lot of our suggestions are a little bit stupid, but doesn't mean they haven't got great science behind them. So that can be something like, yeah, having more arms. I currently have a baby, so actually having tons more arms would be more useful and get things done.
Crikey.
Yeah. Just if I could find ways of making him sleep, that'd be even a better one. But
do you think the human species will evolve, or is evolution going to be kind of an outdated concept for our species when we're so aligned with kind of technology and it's more of a technological embracing?
Some people do say that. Some people go so far as to say that human evolution has stopped, and for human evolution to stop, that means death has to stop, and that ain't happening. So for evolution to happen, you need two things. You need variation and you need selection. We currently have massive variation just because there's so many more humans at the moment. So if you're going to look for evolutionary potential at genetic variety, this is the time to look for it. Mm. All it takes is one pandemic and we've had an evolutionary shift right there. So, our podcast, we talk about more of the sort of transhumanism thing. The idea that if you could change the species based on will rather than on the environment, what would you do? And that is the next big stage, particularly as we are getting technology becoming more integral, as we're starting to understand our own biochemistry more, that we can switch hormones on and off and have massive increases in longevity, that we just live so much more longer.
We're getting so much more control, aren't we?
Yeah, and that can be good and that can be bad, and there will be costs, but it doesn't mean that there won't be benefits. So we're interested in that.
And it's good to think about it and think critically and just... you know, make sure that everything's going the right direction.
We're a sort of comedy podcast, which means that we can debate these ideas in a light manner. I think my favourite suggestion I've had so far was somebody said we need earlids.
Earlids?
Yeah, so that was a good one. You can see why, actually. It's because if you don't like somebody, you don't have to look at them. You still have to listen to them. So you can close your eyes. Why can't you close your ears?
Also super useful for swimming and not getting water in your ear.
Spot on. Although, actually, here's one of the cool bits, is as soon as you think of something like that, you nearly always find examples in nature. So a lot of bats, they don't have earlids, but they've got something which effectively acts like earlids. They can shut off their hearing because otherwise they deafen themselves with their high-pitched squeaks.
No way.
So if you're going to echolocate, they have to be able to squeak and switch off their hearing for that little bit of time. So yeah, if you can imagine it happens.
Wow, animals are so cool. I am so inspired to go away and just read up on so many more.
Well, and the axolotl, surely. That's now your new mascot.
Absolutely. I'm going to make photos. I'm going to get proper t-shirts. Cardboard cutout, t-shirts, badges, all coming our way. Thank you so much for coming on today, Simon. It's been an absolute pleasure. What is your final song?
Well, this one again is because of the kid. This is Adieu, Sweet Lovely Nancy, a traditional sea shanty sung by the Ballina Whalers. This is what I use to put the kid to sleep.
And I should say, if anyone has any ideas for how they want to change our species, you can tweet at LevelUpHuman.
Yeah, take your suggestions, please.
Science Mixtape. But for now, goodbye.
Sweet lovely Nancy, 10,000 times adieu. I'm going across the ocean, love, to seek for something new. Come change your ring with me, dear girl, come change your ring with me, that it might be a token of true love when I am out at sea. And when I am far out at sea, you'll know not where I am. Kind letters I will write to you from every foreign land.
For more Science Mixtape, you can find our shows on Audioboom, iTunes, or any other podcast provider. Or join us live every Saturday at 10 a.m. on Soho Radio, recently voted the best online radio station in the world.